With that, we bring in one of the absolute best in the business from NBC Sports, Football Morning in America as well. You can read that column every Monday morning, Peter King. Welcome back.
Steve Jones, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Who do the Lions have tomorrow?
Minnesota tomorrow night. So,
and it's going to be a whiteout game?
It'll be a whiteout game on ABC.
Wow. Wow, that'll be fun. Does everybody wear white? Like, if I came in with a blue Penn State sweatshirt and walked into the stadium, would I get dirty looks from people?
Probably.
Yeah.
So the Minnesota fans will be about 4,000 and will be wearing maroon. They will stick out.
Yeah.
So they
That's
will stick
wild.
Out. Yeah, it is wild. And, you know, something that's also wild is that I was reading your column a couple of weeks ago. I didn't realize your wife, Ann, was there when Roberto Clemente had his 3,000th hit, hit ever.
Yeah, she's a Pittsburgher, and she idolized Clemente. And she's in that David Marinus book about Clemente. She's in it a lot, in fact. And
is she really?
That day, he got the hit on a Saturday afternoon game, okay? And obviously, that's the last hit that Roberto Clemente ever got in the regular season. That was his 3,000th hit. And she and a couple of girlfriends came into the game. She was, I think, 13 years old, and or maybe 14. But they came into the game, and they all had brown bags of confetti that they had stayed up on Friday night making. And so they threw the confetti at Roberto Clemente when he got his hit. So yeah, it was she'll remember that the rest of her life, that's for sure.
Double off John Maclack, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah. It's interesting, just as a quick side note, Jack Ham and I went down to the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh to speak, and Franco Harris was there. And Franco's doing a 50th anniversary look back for a podcast, so he was interviewing Jack about that. And Dana, his wife, was doing the video. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking as I'm watching this play out, what an incredible roller coaster of 8 days in Pittsburgh 50 years ago. The Immaculate
Absolutely.
Reception... 8 days later, Roberto Clemente dies.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. And in fact, the Immaculate Reception happens, okay? Then on New Year's Eve at Three River Stadium, the undefeated Miami Dolphins came in, because in those days, you didn't get playoff seeding by regular season record. It was just designated before the year. And so the Miami Dolphins, undefeated, came in and played a playoff game against the Steelers. Miami beat Cleveland in the first playoff game in Miami. And then the second playoff game, they had to come to Pittsburgh. So they won the game. And how about this? They come, you know, they are off the field at like 4:15 in the afternoon. And 6 hours later, Roberto Clemente's plane goes down in the ocean, and he's dead. And everybody wakes up in Pittsburgh the next morning as if they weren't bummed out enough by the Steelers. Obviously, this is a whole different kettle of fish, and everybody in Pittsburgh was just... I remember how I felt, how awful it was.
Yes.
You know, you and I in Enfield, Connecticut, And these poor people in Pittsburgh, you know, losing the greatest idol who played sports in their town. So yeah, it was an awful day.
Hundreds of miles away, you know, we're crestfallen. Imagine how they felt there.
Yeah, of course.
Larry Seipel had a fake punt, if I remember, in that game. He ran a fake punt for a long way in that game.
Against
the Steelers. All right, so now the Steelers are going to play Miami on Sunday night, and the 72 Dolphins will be honored at that game. But it's also a game where Tua is expected to be back, Kenny Pickett said today he's been cleared. Peter, give me what the feeling is around the NFL, and especially in the NFL office, when you think you have a protocol settled and now you're adjusting it.
Well, it was really kind of interesting this week at the league meeting in New York. There was a lot of talk about Tua, and there's still this unsettled feeling that somehow, some way, he got to be back on the field after what happened in that game. And you know, you know, obviously in the first game when he went to the ground against Buffalo, and he probably should not have returned to that game, but he did. And then 4 days later against Cincinnati, he gets concussed and he's in bad shape. But I think in general, the NFL and the NFLPA were a little bit late to the party of mandating that when a player shows some gross motor instability, wobbling, punch drunkenness, whatever you would call it. But when a guy is wobbly on the field, there's no ifs, ands, or buts anymore. He will be removed from the game. That's the right way to handle it. I think it is it's strange and a little bit sad and kind of weird, quite honestly, that the first person to have, you know, to be tested under the new protocol was Teddy Bridgewater, who was playing for Tua Tagovailoa. And the weird part of this one is nobody saw him wobbly, and other than the spotter upstairs, who also is a trained, you know, a trained physician. And once he sees what he believes is a gross motor instability, or what the NFL is now calling ataxia, they can take him out for the game. And so that's exactly what happened with this spotter. And so it's something is going to happen down the stretch of this season. I'm not exactly sure when it'll happen or how it will happen, but there will be a big game. And if a guy wobbles a little bit and is taken out of the game, I think even though everybody's going to be screaming, hey, wait a second, that was just like a very short thing, you don't know how bad the guy is, I think we're going to need to be patient with this, because you really do want to err on the side of caution. So I think finally, even though it took him a while, the players in the league got it right.
Yeah, because I know in being around Penn State, you know, all the time, I know how cautious they are, and everything you got to go through just to get back. It takes a while, without question. I was very cautious about any criticism about the Buffalo game, because, I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, I know, Peter, you were cautious too. I know you wanted to hear what they had to say, what the investigation said. I felt the same way, because to me, if you're a medical professional, your integrity's on the line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do something like that.
That's Steve. You know, it bothers me that that some guy, a medical professional, basically got fired by the players' union because they think that he did a shoddy job in not diagnosing this as a concussion. First of all, somebody from the league was telling me that the really bad part of that, okay, is that there's not very much money in this. It's sort of a prestige job for you to be an unaffiliated neurotraumatic consultant on the sidelines making these judgments. And you probably think it's kind of cool to be on the sidelines of an NFL game. But if you then are going to have your integrity called into question, you know, somebody from the league said this, I can guarantee you we will lose some of these consultants over this because they'll see that, look, it's not well known at all who these UNCs are, but somebody who is a good investigative person could find out who the Miami Dolphins UNC is at home games. Yeah. And so I don't know who it is. I have not looked into it. But it's sad now that this person is going to be known as the guy who got fired. And, you know, this guy could well be a very reputable brain surgeon in South Florida. I mean, that's what's crazy about this. Yeah. It didn't go the way it should have gone.
Right. And no, exactly. Because, I mean, you and I have been around enough team doctors, trainers, and so forth. Like, they're the ones that have the final say on whether somebody goes in or out. And guess what? You know, their reputation is on the line every time they make a call like that.
Yeah. So. You know, there's one other thing about that, Steve.
Please.
And that is, and this is what I have found in my years covering it, okay? Like, I do think there have been some coaches in the 80s coming into the 90s who will say, get that guy back in the game. Get him off the bench. Let's go. Let's play.
Yep.
And that happened before, this new knowledge we all have about long-term head injury, brain injury damage, okay? I'm just telling you, I have not heard of a trainer on the sidelines, an NFL head athletic trainer on the sidelines, or a team doctor. I have not heard of a coach coming over to him saying, hey, Doc, you know, cut the BS right here. Put John Doe back in the game right now. Those are things that in the 80s you heard about. I just don't hear that anymore. There's too much at stake with guys' lives, and we see so many players having the ill effects from playing football that you can't do that anymore. Those days are over.
And that's what I hear from coaches all the time. And I'm talking going back the last 20 years plus. I've had so many coaches say to me, Steve, it's just not my call.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude that they've taken. I don't care who it is. Along the way, whether it was Joe or James or anybody along the way. When you look at this, one last question, then I'll let you go. But it does deal with the scoring in the league because there have been, it felt like the first month was the preseason, at least to me. Now, last night I had some points. You know, what theories have you heard as to why scoring is not as apparently explosive as the past few years?
I think the biggest reason, you know, a couple of weeks ago I wrote about this, and you know, I feel pretty confident that the biggest reason is, you know, this is so ironic. Vic Fangio got fired last year as the coach of the Broncos, and yet it's his defense that is becoming so popular, okay? Yes. And his defense, in essence, is a classic, very conservative, two deep safeties, and forcing teams to go 13 plays, 78 yards, instead of 7 plays, 78 yards, instead of blitzing more, challenging people. They say, hey, listen, you can have the little 7-yard dump offs to the tight end till the cows come home. We're going to gamble that you're either going to not be able to go downfield making short gains consistently, or at some point you're going to turn it over. And so that has contributed to it a lot. And Steve, even if you are efficient and have these long drives, okay, instead of touchdown drives now being, you know, 4 minutes and 10 seconds, mm-hmm. now they're 8 minutes and 10 seconds. Right. Okay, so it just kills a lot more clock, and it leads to fewer possessions. So I think that has been the biggest thing. More and more teams are just sitting back and saying, go ahead, nickel and dime us to death. We will gamble that you're not going to be able to do that for 60 minutes and beat us. And I think that has been a big part of it. The other small factor, and it's a small one, is that I think there have been a bunch of young quarterbacks who've been handed the reins of teams who are struggling and who have not played great consistently. You know, and that goes for Trevor Lawrence. It goes for Justin Fields. It goes for Zach Wilson. You look at Zach Wilson's a great example. What are the New York Jets doing right now? They're unleashing Breece Hall on the defense and telling Zach Wilson, okay, you might be this generation's Bob Greasy. You might only throw it 18 times a game or 14 times a game. You know, if we can run efficiently, we're going to do that. And so I think those are probably the two biggest things that are going on.
Yeah, what, back-to-back Super Bowls, 7 and 8, Greasy attempted maybe 15 total passes, both games total?
Yeah, one of them, I think he threw 6.
Yeah.
And I mean, in those days, just think about it. If you've got Mercury Morris, Larry Zonka, and Jim Kick, and at the time, 3 of the top 10 running backs in football, then, and you're Don Shula, why would you do anything? And you've got that great offensive line, the great run-blocking offensive line. Then, of course, you know, Bob Greasy is just going to be a facilitator. He's going to be John Stockton, you know, the assist guy. And so that was huge, and it's kind of ironic that that's 50 years ago. I think everything always comes back in football. Everything.
I agree with you. I totally agree with that.
And if you look at the way the New York Jets are playing right now, I don't know if it'll continue. I can't tell you that. But, I mean, they are really, last week in Green Bay, man, they were really back to the future. So we'll see.
Yeah. And one other note, I mean, when you're talking about defense, okay, it's cover 2. They're keeping you underneath, and then the field shortens up. And when the field shortens up, how many times are they getting field goals and not touchdowns?
That's a great point. It's a great point because they don't have that explosive player. And, you know, the best teams inside the 10, inside like the tight red zone, the best teams are the ones who can unleash a Deebo Samuel. Or you watch this, Steve, you watch this in the next few weeks. You watch a guy for the Giants named Wandale Robinson, okay?
Yes.
A guy from Kentucky, second-round pick. Mm-hmm. If he'd been healthy right now, he'd be not in the driver's seat, but he'd be a major candidate for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yep.
But that is what you need way down close. You know how you do that jet motion and sometimes you have a guy just sprinting in front of the quarterback. 2 out of 3 times you ignore him. 1 out of 3 times you just pitch the ball to him and he's going so fast that he's going to find a crease to make it into the end zone. And the one other thing that I think is a fantastic approach to offensive football is the way the Saints use Taysom Hill. And it isn't only him running the ball, but last night there was a brilliant play where he caught just a little dump-off pass from Andy Dalton in the game for the Saints against Arizona. And the reason why it was so effective and why he was able to pull in for the touchdown is because he has not been used as a pass catcher.
That's right.
He's thrown a few, and he's run, but he hasn't been used. So nobody thought he was going to do that. They just thought he was a decoy. And then he gets the ball, and the next thing you know, it's 7 points. So, listen, there's still a lot of room for imagination at all levels of football. And, you know, so we'll see how it goes the rest of the way.
All too familiar, by the way, with Wandale Robinson. He hurt Penn State when he was at Nebraska before he transferred to Kentucky. So no,
is that right? I didn't know that. I thought he was just at Kentucky. No. Wow.
Yeah, Kentucky recruited him hard, and this is the way recruiting is today, Peter. Kentucky did a great job of just, hey, okay, you're going to Nebraska, great. And he goes to Nebraska, and he's an electric player there. And he, and in 2020, he played really well against Penn State. And then he transferred back to Kentucky because they kept the channels open. So that's
wow. Wow, yeah. That's wild.
Hey, get better, okay?
Okay, hey, listen, thanks a million, Steve. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Peter.
Yep.